And now for reading and writing and radio.
Bateman's, Burwash, Sussex, England, July 8, 1908. Dear Ducky Dicky Bird, this I consider quite the lowest title for you that even I have invented. Please tell me how angry it made you. There is nothing whatever to record, so I sit down to write it out in length. Yesterday was a beautiful lazy day, no beastly daughter to make one play tennis, so I simply loafed. I remember distinctly that I washed when I got up, one should always wash, but after that I did nothing. We took the motor car at 3:30 and went to Netherfield Quarry to order some more stone. We intend to continue stoning the path past the tennis court from the garden. We found the quarry and an intelligent foreman who knew everything except the price of the stone, and he said, pointing to a cliff, "We shan't get at your kind of stone for a fortnight, at least." It was as though a small ant had said, "Wait till I've pushed down this mountain." Then we came home by way of Battle and Roberts Bridge and nearly broke our backs by watering plants all the evening. Today we aren't doing anything at all that I know of, except going to look at the bees, which may or may not be an exciting piece of work. Dear love from us both to you, and remember that among those who love you is your esteemed Daddo.
The author of that letter to his daughter was the writer of the Just So stories, Rudyard Kipling. But you can write funny and lively and entertaining and informative letters too, can't you?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
This is Jackie Jackson speaking. I want to welcome you to Reading and Writing and Radio. This is our second program of the season of 1991-92. I'm here at Sangamon State University recording with our engineer, Kurt Knightsky, and I'm hoping that you'll all listen every week all year and send in your writings, and I'll read from your class regularly if you send in regularly. And I want to welcome you to our pen pal exchange. Most of you teachers know how this works and its value, so I won't spend this whole program on a pen pal pitch. What you do is you send in right away the sign-up sheet that's in your manual telling your class size and grade and anything else that will help us, and that's myself and a group of teachers, in matching up your class with another class in our listening area. Then we match you. It's very rarely a perfect marriage because classes aren't the same size, and sometimes they're mixed fourth, fifth, for instance, and then we need to match you with a fourth or a fifth if we don't have another mixed class, and you can see that there are problems to making it work perfectly, but we do our very best. Then we let you teachers know who your pen class and pen teacher is and the address and the phone number, and the two of you get together on the phone and decide which class will send the first batch of letters. And usually, you pair up the kids, too, who's going to be the pen pal of whom, to the best of your ability. Then, the class that writes first gets off their letters, and you don't send them to me or to WSSR. You send them direct to your pen pal class, and then as soon as the other class gets them, then they answer, and you're on your way. And you can do all sorts of creative things. not only writing letters, but you can send cards, you can make up party packets, you can send pictures. Last year, the fifth grade students of Peggy Goodwin in Chatham and Jane Ford in Springfield exchanged assignments and graded each other's book reviews and did all sorts of interesting things in addition to letters. And in the spring, even though we weren't able to have a jamboree, the two classes met at Sangamon State and they had their own mini jamboree. They visited the radio station and the observatory, had a star lecture with Charlie Schweighauser. We all had a picnic together with games and relays. Any of you can do that this year. There's a social and a community value to all these pen pal classes, lacing you up the area. And there's a language arts value of writing letters. That's pretty clear, because it's language arts in action. This is no school exercise. It's the real thing. And if you get a letter that you can barely read the handwriting and can't decipher the spelling, and when you finally manage to, it turns out to be boring, you'll see why you need to write plainly and to spell well enough for somebody else to understand, and above all, to make your own letters interesting and lively so that your reader won't be bored with yours. Now, one word of warning. Please, please don't sign up for a pen pal class if you're not going to follow through. Have your teacher share with you the cartoon on the front of the new manual where Sally is so upset that her pen pal hasn't written. She's writing a letter, "Dear stupid pen pal." It's disappointing and frustrating. No class wants to wait week after week and not get any response from the letters that they've sent. In the manual, I said that Mary Lou Burnett, another professor here at Sangamon State, was going to be with me and tell you about having a pen pal in Russia. She was recently in Russia, and she came back with names of individual kids who would like pen pals. But she has been called out of town this week and is not yet back, and so I've gone ahead without her. What I'd like you to do about that is to send in your name if you would like to correspond with a Soviet student about your age. Now, I don't know how many students she has on her list, but I will pass your name on to her. Now, again, if you start a correspondence, be prepared to answer the letters that you will receive from your Russian pen pal. So, that's our business. And now, oh beloved kids and beloved teachers too, I want to take a few minutes to talk about a new book of letters that I just bought in England at the actual home of the author. Most of you, I think, the teachers know that we took a class to England last June, and several of you teachers went along, and one of the places we went to was Burwash. The name of the home was Bateman's, and it belonged to Rudyard Kipling, who was a very famous author. And the name of this book that I bought there, I'll stop for just a second and say we're going to go again. We're going to go next June, and so I'd like a lot of you other teachers to be thinking about going along and to ask Rose Corgan and Helen Jameson and Ann Linval what sort of time they had. Anyway, the name of the book that I bought at Kipling's home is Oh Beloved Kids. Kipling is dead now. He's been dead a long time, but these letters have only recently been made available to the public, have only recently been published after the death of his daughter, Elsie, who kept the lid on her father's papers. They were a very private family. You may know some of Rudyard Kipling's books, and if you don't, you should. Have your teacher get a hold of out of the library, or maybe he or she has a copy of their own, of the Just So stories. And these really should be read aloud. The most famous is How the Elephant Got Its Trunk. And it's about that most satiably courteous little elephant, the elephant's child, who lived in the jungle beside the great gray, green, greasy Limpopo River, all ringed about with fever trees. And my favorite is about the cat who walked by his wild, wild lone, and all things were alike to him. Kipling also is famous for The Jungle Book. which I discovered in sixth grade, and I fell in love with it, and I read it over and over again, and I lived in its enchantment, and I planned a mural to put on my wall that I actually never got painted on, but in my plan, Mowgli, the jungle boy who was raised by the wolves and was able to talk to all the animals, the tiger, the bear, the great snake, Mowgli was the central figure in my mural, which was going to be of the children's books that I loved the most, the books that I read and loved. Kipling wrote many books for adults, too, but this particular book is not letters to adults, but is the letters that he wrote to his children. He had three children. His first daughter, Josephine, is the one for whom he wrote the Just So stories. And she died of pneumonia when she was seven. This would have been early in the century. I'm not sure of the date. The letter that I read you at the start of this program was written in about 1907 or 1908. And that was not written to Josephine. She had died considerably before that. But Kipling had written it to his younger daughter, Elsie, and he also had a younger son, John. Kipling himself, by the way, was ill with pneumonia at the same time that Josephine was, and Josephine died, and Kipling nearly died. But he did not. He lived to write many more books and to write these letters to his children. Whenever they were away, or when he was away from them, he would write them letters. And I've already read you one, and I'll read you another one more. And I want to read you these because they are so interesting. Here is one that he wrote to Elsie, whom he had called Dear Ducky Bird in that other letter, when she had gone on a trip to London. And you need to know that when he refers to Mr. Campbell in a letter, that he is really meaning himself, that that's another name for himself. And so whenever he gives any advice or is saying certain funny things, he has Mr. Campbell saying those things. So here's his letter. He says, Dear Elsie Bird, the house is four times emptier. Oh, this is in June 9th, 1908. Dear Elsie Bird, the house is four times emptier and five times larger than it was at 11 o'clock this morning. Can it be possible, said Mr. Campbell, that the departure of a F-T-P-RS-N, and that, of course, when you see it in writing, is fat person. Is it possible, said Mr. Campbell, that the departure of a fat person in a pony cart has had anything to do with this surprising change? I think so. This afternoon, after lunch, I nobly weeded the peony bed under the wall with a knife. I am indeed an energetic worker. I was getting on splendidly till Mummy came and helped me with a spud shovel. Then we quarreled and fought about our different systems of weeding. Mine was the delicate and refined, how like me. Hers was the careless and slapdash, how like you. Anyway, between us, we weeded the peony bed. After tea, I went out with my papa, your grandpapa, up to the village to inquire after Colonel Felden. He is a great deal better, has slept during the day, and his breathing is easier. Aren't you glad? As my papa and I walked up the footpath that leads to Ten Oak Shaw, we saw a she-child about 2 foot high and a he-baby about 18 inches high climb over the stile. I don't know if you American kids or kids of this age know what a stile is, but we had them in our farm, which was a sort of a little stairway up and over a fence. Anyway, this she-child and he-baby were climbing over the stile. There were a lot of cows in the meadow. The cows were naturally interested in the small things, and that made them afraid. They stopped, hand in hand, and moved by little rushes at a time. Naturally, the cows were more interested. Equally naturally, the babes got more frightened. Though I had no daughter to protect me against the fierce onslaughts of the cows, they gurgled in their throats, I advanced alone to those small, panic-stricken babes and escorted them past the ferocious cows, several of which whisked their tails. As soon as they got to the other stile, the kids scuttled over like rabbits. This is a tale of noble heroism. There isn't any other news, so I send you a few simple rules for life in London. 1. Wash early and often with soap and hot water. 2. Do not roll on the grass of the parks. It will come off black on your dress. 3. Never eat penny buns, oysters, periwinkles, or peppermints on the top of a bus. It annoys the passengers. 4. Be kind to policemen. You never know when you may be taken up. 5. Never stop a motor bus with your foot. It is not a croquet ball. 6. Do not attempt to take pictures off the wall of the National Gallery or to remove cases of butterflies from the Natural History Museum. You will be noticed if you do. 7. Avoid late hours, pickled salmon, public meetings, crowded crossings, gutters, water carts, and overeating. That is all I can think of at present, but if you ever feel doubtful about your conduct, you have only to write, and I myself will instruct you further, said Mr. Campbell. Dear love from us both, ever your Dado. So, why am I reading you kids, you beloved kids, these letters? Why am I adding that Beatrix Potter wrote a letter that said, My dear Noel, I hear you're sick. I don't know what to write, so I will tell you about some rabbits. Once upon a time, there were 4 little rabbits, and their names were Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter. They lived with their mother under the root of a very big fir tree. And then that whole letter was the story of Peter Rabbit. And Kenneth Graham, who wrote The Wind in the Willows, he wrote that whole story in letters to his son, little bits at a time, addressing his letters to my dear mouse. Why? Why? Because I want you to know that letters can be interesting and lively. They can be full of fun detail even when nothing much happens other than weeding the peony bed or going down to take a look at the bees. It's how you look at life. And so, oh beloved kids, while you are waiting to write your pen pals or to hear from your pen pals so that you can then write them, how about writing me an interesting letter all about anything at all?
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.